Welcome to the first joint hearing of the bonding committees this year. Hopefully, there'll be many more. Am I hearing thunder, or must be my strong voice? Welcome, Senator Stump, to our committee. Glad you're here. Glad to have the Senate with us. You notice, those of you on the House committee know that we always start on time, but today we're on Senate time, so we're starting a little bit after the appointed hour because that's just the way it is. We do have a little business to take care of, House business, and that would be approval of the minutes. Representative, would you like to make a motion, Representative Albright? Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Today, we are focused solely on the Lewis and Clark Water Project. As all of you, I think, know, this was a hot topic of conversation right near the end of session last year and resulted in a cash input from the state into this project. There were some last-minute negotiations that resulted in various proposals being incorporated, and we would like to get a better understanding of that. Members, as we go through the presentation today, feel free to ask questions. Senators, please channel your questions through Senate staff and House members through our House staff. And please keep your questions kind of restricted to the topic on the table at the moment. We have a lot of ground to cover and would like to kind of stay on task. So feel free to ask questions. We will interrupt the speakers as we go, but try to keep it with confined to the topic that's in front of us at the time. I've met with the presenters, and they have a lot of ground to cover. I believe they're going to cover all the topics that we're most interested in. With that, I would call Jeff Freeman from the PFA forward. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. And what I am going to do today is give just sort of a high-level overview, background of this Lewis and Clark regional water system and a summary of the state funding that's been appropriated to date. And then I'll turn it over to the other presenters to add more detail. So in your packets, I believe you have just a one-page summary of that I'll be speaking from. This is something that we put together from the PFA. This is our understanding and of the basic details. The other presenters can, as I mentioned, fill in more detail or if there's any inaccuracies, but I don't think there are. So the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System was authorized by Congress in 2000 to address water quantity and quality problems in areas of South Dakota, Iowa, and southwestern Minnesota by bringing water from aquifers near the Missouri River through a system of pipelines, treatment plants, reservoirs to serve users in that area. The Lewis and Clark Regional Water System is owned and governed by a board representing 15 cities and 5 rural water systems in those 3 states. The 4 Minnesota members are the cities of Laverne, Worthington, also the Rock County Rural Water System, and the Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System. Those 4 entities have formed a joint powers board, the Lewis and Clark Joint Powers Board, which is the 4 Minnesota members. The original funding plan called for 80% federal funding of the entire system, 80% federal funding, 10% from the 3 states, and 10% from the local members. The non-federal share has now been fully paid by the 3 states and the 20 local members. Federal appropriations started, I believe, in 2004. There were significant amounts appropriated each year through about 2010. And then at that point, those appropriations slowed to a trickle, if you will. There have been federal money appropriated through the Bureau of Reclamation, but it's a very small amount when it gets divided up by the Bureau among all the different projects in the country. Approximately 65% of the total system has been built to date, is my understanding, but none of that really in Minnesota to this point. The state funding started in 2005. The 2005 bonding bill provided $2 million with a one-to-one match requirement. The following year, in 2006, there was another appropriation of almost $3.3 million from bonding. After those appropriations were made, it was realized that because of the structure and the purpose for this funding and the structure of the regional water system, the funding source and the language really didn't work. And so in 2008, there was rider language that changed those bonding appropriations to be general fund appropriations, and changed it to be grants to the four Minnesota members, grants to the Joint Powers Board to make a payment and equity contribution to the Regional Water System Incorporated. It was the state's and the local match that we put up. So at that point, then the state was fully paid up. The local members were fully paid up when we awarded that grant in July of 2008. The local match was actually exceeded the one-to-one requirement, the local match was about $7.6 million. In 2014, then, just last year, because the federal funds were no longer sufficient to fund any significant construction on the system in Minnesota, the legislature approved an appropriation of $22 million from the Capital Projects Cash Bill. As you recall, last session there was a bonding bill and then there was a cash bill for capital projects. That appropriation was made from the cash bill for, and I'll talk about that a little more in a minute, required a $5 million non-state match, which was made, as I understand, actually was again exceeded. That match requirement was exceeded, and the other presenters can say more about that. The purpose of that appropriation was to acquire land, design, and construct the pipeline and other infrastructure necessary for what was defined as phase one of the Minnesota project, which would be bringing the pipeline to Laverne, city of Laverne. And then there was some language that, if possible, it would extend beyond Laverne to Magnolia. That appropriation was made from cash because of the complicated ownership structure of this system. The Lewis and Clark Incorporated, which is the main regional water regional authority located in South Dakota, to this point has owned everything that's been built on the system. The state money is appropriated to the Joint Powers Board, and the Joint Powers Board will own the elements that are being built, the pipeline to Laverne. But part of that construction will be on easements owned by the Lewis and Clark Incorporated. The Joint Powers Board is contracting with the Lewis and Clark Incorporated to actually do the construction work. That's what their purpose is. There's also was contemplated, has been discussed through last session and I'm sure again today, the possibility that federal funds will be appropriated at some point in the future toward this project, and then there could be perhaps some repayment back to the state for these funds that have been granted. That repayment would take place through a transaction that would essentially be the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System Incorporated purchasing segments of the pipeline that had been built to Luverne back again, and then they would pay for it. The Joint Powers Board would then have those funds, pay them back to the state if that were to occur. And I guess nobody knows for sure what the future of federal funding will be for this, but that's another complication. And so the ownership structure, the possible repayment structure, all of those things necessitated that the appropriation last session be made from cash instead of bonding. The PFA awarded the grant to the Joint Powers Board in December of 2014, just a couple of months ago. That construction or the work under those contracts is now underway in terms of, I think, the pipe has been ordered. The main work won't really begin until this spring on building that pipeline, but the main contracts have been awarded, and it's getting started. In addition, since this was the phase one, phase two and phase three, ultimately this pipeline will extend all the way to Worthington. The last year, in a desire to kind of have a funding mechanism that would fully fund all of that work, there was some language in the 2014 tax bill that set up a mechanism by which the local governments, the counties, I think, would issue local bonds to do the construction work of phases two and three. And then there would be annual state appropriations to those entities to help pay the debt service on those bonds and through a formula. And I think, and I'm not familiar with the details of that, my understanding is that language has some difficulty or doesn't work very well, and the other presenters can talk about that. With that, that's my presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. I have a question. The matches that have been required in these previous funding efforts, are they part of the local share, or are they potentially to be refunded?
Mr. Chair, the match to the first, the 2005 and 2006 appropriations, that local match was then constituted, I believe, the 10% local share that was the original funding plan. The $5 million match requirement from last year's appropriation, I think, is over and above that.
So that $5 million would potentially be reimbursable if federal dollars showed up? Would that be correct? Or am I assuming too much?
Mr. Chair, I believe, and I can be correct, please correct me if I'm wrong, other presenters, I believe that if the federal government were to fully fund this thing from this point forward, the local additional money that the locals had put in could be paid back, as well as the state money that had been appropriated.
Very good. We have some other questions for you, Mr. Freeman. First, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm understanding correctly that this water is finished in Vermilion, South Dakota, at a plant there. It's traveling a long way. Does it have to be refinished when it gets to a community in Minnesota?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, that question gets outside of my expertise, so I'm not aware of additional treatment plants that are part of the Minnesota portion of the system, so I think not, but I'm not positive.
Perhaps someone later could answer that.
I believe so. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, we've got some financial problems here on this project and everything else, and I know that this is that the authority set up as a nonprofit wholesale provider of the water here. I can't help but think, many cities, and I'm a former mayor, many cities, all cities, sell water and make a little money on it. Has there been any thought to selling water more like cities do, where there is some profit and putting that money back into the system?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding, the user there are user charges for the water. There are entities, cities in South Dakota that are already receiving water from the system, and they pay a user charge to cover the operation and maintenance of the system, the treatment costs, the piping costs, all of that, and that's would be the way a city would operate its system as well, and that's the plan for as Minnesota users come online, they would pay the user charges to cover those operational costs. So the money here that we're talking about is strictly for the construction capital costs.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, follow up.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Uglum.
Yes. Well, I guess we all know about user costs and things like that, but what I'm talking about, is there a consideration for profitability? I mean, you have your costs, overhead, so on and so forth, and make some money on this and turn around and allow that money to be put into financing the new system. In many cities, most cities, I do believe, this is what happens. We have our overhead and user costs and all of that, plus a profit. And at the end of the year, at least in the city of Champlin, we made money on water, and we'd sell a little water to some of our other surrounding cities, and maybe we'd build a new park and things like that. So, I mean, you've got a money problem. We really can't depend on the feds too much for a lot of things. You should be looking at different ways to finance this that can get some more miles built on this system. Thank you.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a question that I'll defer to the other presenters, the members of the system, the nonprofit, and they'd be best able to answer that.
Thank you. I'm just going to interrupt briefly. If there are representatives in the audience, I realize our seating is limited, that have a question, representatives or senators. I don't know who's left out there, but there's a chair at the end of the table here. If you want to come forward to ask a question, please feel free to do that. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just a statement. Since I've been quoted in some southern Minnesota newspapers as saying that it was in the cash bill because it wouldn't have passed in the bonding bill, I'm grateful for Mr. Freeman's testimony, which says very clearly appropriation made from cash because of complicated ownership structure. That is, in fact, the reason it happened. And the problem is, once you get a quote like that out there, it just sort of repeats itself. And so now I've seen it a couple of ways. So I'm glad to get the correction officially on the record.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. I didn't hear a question in there. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Freeman, just so we're clear on this, we can, under the existing structure, we cannot general obligation bond finance Lewis and Clark. Is that correct?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, ultimately that would be a question for MMB and State Bond Council. So all I know is that it's very complicated. And specifically, what does that mean? I would defer to MMB on that.
A follow-up, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, maybe to follow up on Representative Uglum's question. So if you had water fees paid by the users like everywhere else. User finance bonds, revenue bonds, possible where water fees could go to pay the bonds rather than the general taxpayers.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, all I can really say is maybe. I think their bond council is a very specialized, as you know, a specialized legal field. They would have, there's constitutional, state constitutional issues. There are state debt statute issues, as well as IRS tax-exempt bonding issues. And so it's out of my pay grade to get into those details, but MMB would be the appropriate place to start with those questions.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and maybe if Ms. Dyson, I think that this question is the key question, so I don't know if Ms. Dyson can answer, or if there's somebody from MMB here that could answer the question.
I do not see any volunteers at this point in time. Here we have one. Thank you for being so brave, and please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Kristen Hansen. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. Chairs, members of the committees. In regards to the bondability question, we are studying the issues that are raised by bonding for the future phases of this project, and Mr. Freeman did a good job addressing some of the issues that have been raised. The ownership requirements based on how the federal law is written is something that we're looking into, because as you know, the state constitution does require a public entity to own the project. In addition, we're looking into the tax issues on how that federal reimbursement works. So those are two concerns that we're going to be looking into. We have not looked into the revenue bond piece, but would be happy to do so.
Thank you very much. We're finished. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Freeman. I had a while back looked at the original federal bill that appropriated the 80% in the original funding plan, and it stated a sum certain in that bill that was to be appropriated. I don't remember the exact number, but it said, as I recall, that the money was to be appropriated until paid. Can you tell us what sum of the original 80% funding plan has been paid by the federal government, and how much remains unpaid under that original plan?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have those numbers, but I know the group behind me from the regional water system has exactly what those amounts are, so I would defer to them.
We'll get to that, Senator, I believe. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Freeman. So I'm still wrapping my head around what this project is a little bit. And I'm looking at what the original allocation was for the project of $573 million as outlined in these documents. And I know that, you know, us as a state and the locals are each doing the 10% match. And I guess my question I'm getting to is, last year we appropriated $22 million, which to me seems to probably exceed what our 10% match would be on this project. And my question is, are other states, South Dakota and Iowa, doing the same thing? Or is the line complete in South Dakota and Iowa, and they pretty much have just decided that Minnesota's on its own?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the I believe Iowa is a similar situation to Minnesota. Very little, if any, work has been completed in Iowa because the source of water is in South Dakota. That's kind of where the construction started, and then, as was noted, that the main treatment plant is located near Sioux Falls. So that's where the majority of the work has been. I think Iowa is similar situation to Minnesota right now.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. I believe the next presenters have much more information on that particular topic, and we'll get to that as we move along. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note there's $200 million left to go in funding the project. And will that be borne in a pro rata share amongst all three states? I mean, is there a portion that is ours of that?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the number that I recall from last session, the full build-out of the Minnesota portion was, I believe, around $60 million. Those costs may have changed a little bit since then, and the other presenters can talk about that. But so the $22 million appropriated is approximately one-third of the Minnesota construction costs.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. I believe we're finished with you for now, so stay close. We may need you later. I'd like to call our other presenters forward to the testifiers table at this point in time. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
My name is Red Arndt. I'm from Luverne, Minnesota. And I represent, or I'm chairman of the board of the Lewis and Clark. Chairman Torkelson, Chairman Stump, committee members, thank you for this joint meeting of the finance committees to hear the Lewis and, to hear from the Lewis and Clark. With me today is Troy Larson, our executive director of the Lewis and Clark, and Scott Hain, Worthington's general manager of Efficient Utilities. We are here today to ask any to answer any questions that you may have on the project. First of all, I have to thank you and the state of Minnesota for the funding appropriated last year needed to keep the Lewis and Clark construction moving on in Minnesota. By doing that, Mayor Pat Boston of Luverne and the Luverne City Council had a restraint move from an economic tool that never really had, water. They can now remove the question they ask every company that came to Luverne for a home. How much water do you need? And if it's a lot, we can't help you. Mayor Boston, the City Council, and the whole city of Luverne also thank you. And by the end of 2015, they will be hooked up to the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System and have that much-needed water. The construction will be starting shortly by a Minnesota company, Carstensen Contracting from Pipestone, and be completed by the fall of 2015. We are back, Troy, to give you the nuts and bolts of the Lewis and Clark, and Scott to talk of the needs of Worthington and ask questions. And we're again asking for more funding, a federal advance, as we receive them, after all the members are connected to the Lewis and Clark, this funding, the members will be paid back proportionately. The funding then will keep the construction moving to get water to the Lewis and Clark in southwest Minnesota through the Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System and the city of Worthington. The need is there. From when we had our first hearing in front of the Legislative Water Commission in 1991, we needed water. From the estimated 35 hearings we've had over the years, we needed water. From when the state appropriated money to drill test wells in southwest Minnesota and found none, we needed water. From when we were authorized and signed into law in 2000, we needed water. From when we started construction in 2003, we needed water. The need for water is greater now than when we started 25 years ago. At present funding levels from the federal government, it will be many years before Worthington or Lakeland Pipestone Rural Water receives any water. They cannot wait any longer. We need to get this done. I know you can say it's not our problem, it's the feds, and I somewhat agree with you. But we are citizens of the state of Minnesota, and you are our elected government. There is there to help its citizens through hard times. So it's kind of a whole state problem. We're not asking for a park, a trail, a building, but needed infrastructure and water essential to for life and growth. So I am asking you that you consider helping the Lewis and Clark again with funding that would move the water project to Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water and to Worthington. This is a much needed project that has been and has been for 25 years, and it needs to find a way to be completed for the Minnesota citizens in southwest Minnesota. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next testifier, I want to go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Hain. I'm the general manager of Worthington Public Utilities, and I'm also Worthington's director on the Lewis and Clark Board. Again, I would like to thank Chairman Farkelson for calling this hearing and recognizing the importance of this project. Very much appreciate the fact that you folks are taking this up early on in the session and that you recognize the need that we do have in southwest Minnesota. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the specific needs. Like Mr. Arndt said, we've been over 30 hearings over the course of the last 25 years, and I think most folks are aware of the water issues in southwest Minnesota. I am more interested in letting Mr. Larson get on with his presentation, which I think will spur a lot of questions, and I'm very anxious to answer those questions for you. Thank you.
The last testifier, please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Troy Larson, Executive Director of the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System, and thank you for the questions you've asked thus far. I know my presentation will cover a lot of those, and by all means, we hope this is a very interactive discussion. I know you have copies in front of you, but on the screen, this is just a highlight of the project membership. As Mr. Freeman indicated, we have 20 cities and rural water and 20 cities and rural water systems that are members. We're a wholesale provider, so we do not provide water to homes and businesses. We're just a wholesale provider, and you heard who the Minnesota members are. I'm not going to spend a lot in the project background other than to emphasize that the project was started in 1990. Last Thursday was our 25th anniversary of the signing of our Articles of Incorporation. You've already heard about the federal cost share. The project is owned by the members. It's not owned by the federal government. Water is drawn from a series of wells down along the banks of the Missouri River by Vermilion, South Dakota. The four Minnesota members have reserved a combined 4.1 million gallons a day with the ability to secure another 2.2 million gallons a day in the future as the system is expanded. And I do want to emphasize that Lewis and Clark's impact in Minnesota goes well beyond Rock and Nobles County, because Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water and Rock County Rural Water serve a combined 21 towns as far north as Dawson. So often Lewis and Clark is thought of as just Rock and Nobles County in southwest Minnesota, and it goes far beyond that. You've heard that the Bureau of Reclamation is the federal agency that provides oversight. Don't know if you're aware of this, but the Bureau of Reclamation only operates in the 17 most western states, with South Dakota and North Dakota being the eastern edge of this. So this is the very first Bureau of Reclamation project in Minnesota or Iowa. And this shows Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water service territory and how far north it goes, just again emphasizing that the impact of Lewis and Clark goes well beyond just Rock and Nobles County. In terms of operations, just quickly, the treatment plant near Vermilion started up in July of 2012. We're delivering water currently to 11 of our 20 members. 10 of those are in South Dakota, and one, Rock Rapids, is in Iowa. We are delivering an average of 9.8 million gallons a day, which is a 24% increase from 2013. The plant is essentially idling because the plant has the capacity to deliver 36 million gallons a day with build out to 45 million and then future expansion to 60. That difference between 45 and 60, there's no federal funding. The only federal funding is to get the plant to 45. Then it'd be up to the members to expand the plant to 60 MGD. The water rates cover operational costs. We get no aid for that, so we do have a number of fixed expenses, so the connected members are paying more for the water now than they would be once all 20 members are connected. In terms of construction, you heard Mr. Freeman indicate the project is 65% complete. We are 6 years behind schedule. Rock County and Laverne will begin receiving water in 2015. At that time, it'll be 13 of 20 members, and I'll talk more about that, but that's thanks to the funding provided last session. But due to the lack of federal funding, there was no construction contracts awarded in FY13. Easement acquisition and engineering were also halted, so we are really at a stop with the project. The three states and 20 members have prepaid 100% of their share of the project. That's a combined $154 million. Unfortunately, the prepaid funds have all been used, so all that's left is the federal funding. So the schedule to complete this project is entirely dependent upon federal funding. And the delay has forced the Minnesota members to spend an additional $10.3 million. That's on top of the combined $9.1 million that the members spent for Lewis and Clark to begin with. So essentially, the members have had to double their costs. And that just bought time. This $10.3 million didn't replace the need for Lewis and Clark, just bought them time in terms of additional infrastructure improvements.
Excuse me, Mr. Yes. Larson, what was that $10.3 spent on?
That is additional infrastructure by the members to buy time. For example, Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water built a connection to Osceola Rural Water in Iowa. Laverne put in some additional filters. These were unexpected expenses that would not have had to been incurred had Lewis and Clark been there. So this is money the cities and rural water systems did not expect to spend, but had to because they saw that Lewis and Clark was quite a ways off.
But just to clarify, that money was not spent on the Lewis and Clark project. This was spent on equipment just to keep them in business until Lewis and Clark gets there.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
But it really added insult to injury that the members combined paid $9.1 million, and then because of the delays with federal funding had to spend another $10.3 because of those delays. So it really was unfortunate. But just it shows that the members have certainly put additional skin in the game. This is what we call the progress map. This is a service area the size of Connecticut, to put it into perspective. The blue lines, the solid blue lines, are where the system is operational. You can see in Iowa we built a section of pipeline where we're buying water from Sioux Center and reselling it to Hull. So all the blue is, solid blue is operational. Thanks to the state of Minnesota funding last session, that line in green from the Iowa-Minnesota border up to Laverne, that is under construction. As Mr. Freeman indicated, the contract has been awarded and construction will start in earnest this spring. And then later this year, we expect to award the contract between Laverne and Magnolia. So we hope soon that line will extend green all the way to Magnolia. And then you can see there's a yellow line in South Dakota where it's shovel ready. The project is just ready for federal funding. And then there's a small line in southeast Sioux Falls that's also yellow, that's shovel ready. The blue dotted lines are where we have done no engineering or easement acquisition, but that's the full build out of the project. In terms of our funding, the overall price tag to date is $573 million. We've spent $370 million so far. And then I'm not going to go over those numbers, but that shows you our recent federal funding. We were doing really well in 2008, 2009. We received $27 million plus almost $60 million in stimulus funding. And then the earmark ban went into effect, and you can see it really dropped off quite a bit. $2.4 million was proposed by the administration in FY16, and I'll talk later how there's been some additional money appropriated for that. We just found out yesterday that the president has proposed $2.7 million for FY16. And as I mentioned, the drop coincided with the earmark ban. Someone asked how much the federal government has paid to date through FY13, which was the last official data that we have from the Bureau of Reclamation. They had paid $212 million with a remaining federal cost share of $203 million. But now to put that in perspective, in 2010, the remaining federal cost share was $194 million. So there was an $8.7 million increase because each year the remaining federal cost share is indexed for inflation. And what the federal government is providing is not enough to keep up with inflation. So that's why we're going backward right now and currently on the path to infinity. This is a chart that shows when the project would be completed under different funding scenarios. The blue line is if we hypothetically got $35 million a year, which is what we ask for every year. The red line is if we got $10 million a year. And then the middle line is essentially the average that we have been getting. So this just shows, you know, people often ask us, when's the project going to be done? And we said, well, we wish we knew. It all depends on federal funding. So this just gives some scenarios. And this assumes 4% inflation, which is what the Bureau of Reclamation uses in their assumptions. Lewis and Clark is one of six authorized Bureau of Reclamation water projects. To put the funding in perspective, the administration's FY15 budget only included $16.3 million for those six projects. Lewis and Clark, the proposal was $2.4 million of that $16.3. Even though the six rural water projects have a combined remaining federal cost share of $1.4 billion. I don't know if there's any math teachers in the room, but you know how the math just does not add up on that. Congress, thankfully, thanks to our tri-state delegation and the Minnesota members, certainly were a huge part of that, they added $31 million for FY15, bringing the total rural water construction for the six projects to $47.3 million. And the Bureau of Reclamation will decide how much of that $31 million Lewis and Clark receives. We expected to learn yesterday how much we'd be receiving, but that decision has been delayed for later this week, so we certainly expect no later than Friday we'll find out how much of that $31 million that we're going to get. Now, to put that in perspective, that may sound like a lot of money, but according to the Bureau of Reclamation's own study, if there were $50 million a year approved for construction and assuming 4% inflation, by 2065, the remaining federal cost share would increase from $1.4 billion to $1.8 billion. So even $50 million a year still puts us on the path to infinity. We have incredibly strong bipartisan support from the tri-state congressional delegation, but unfortunately the administration is not making rural water a priority. And in addition, the earmark ban wrongly includes authorized projects. Our tri-state delegation, even the most conservative Republicans, agree that the earmark ban should not have included authorized projects, and unfortunately that's been a challenge trying to get that changed. The longer it takes to complete, the more expensive it becomes due to inflation, and the longer it takes to realize the economic benefits. So it's really a double whammy for the taxpayers. And we want to stress how much Lewis and Clark hated to come back to the three states for help. All three states had done their share, as have the Lewis Clark members. So this is the last thing that we wanted to be doing. Unfortunately, the federal government put us in a position where the members felt we had no choice but to come back and ask for help. These federal funding advances, what are they? They're zero-interest unsecured loans that would be paid back using future federal funds to the degree they are made available. A payback would occur once all 20 members are connected, but before the project is completed. And that's important to emphasize that the members of Lewis and Clark have agreed to defer an estimated $33 million worth of construction until the states are repaid. This is construction that is needed once all the members are connected to make the system more reliable, more dependable. So all the members can get the majority of their water. It's just they won't have as much storage, for example, or as much pumping, and the treatment plant won't be built out to its full extent. We want to do this because the concern we heard in Des Moines was if the federal government, or if the project is completed and all that remains is to repay the states, what's the federal government's incentive? And so we heard that loud and clear, and that's why the commitment's been made by the members to defer that estimated $33 million worth of construction until after the states have been paid. How would the states be repaid? It would be based proportionally on the advances they've provided. And I'll talk here further how we're approaching Iowa, and South Dakota has already put in advances. So you would do the math proportionally of how much each state has put in, because this payback would occur over a series of years. We don't get big chunks of federal funding, so we may have in a given year $8-9 million to repay, and so we have to have a way to divide that amongst the three states. And so that would be done proportionally, again, based on the advances they've been provided. Also to emphasize, the federal government has never reneged on a rural water project. We have never gotten zero funding. We've always gotten funding. It's just that the amounts have been so slow we can't make any meaningful construction. So we are providing strong assurances to the states that they will be paid, repaid. We can't tell you the timeline, though, and we can't use the G word. We can't provide you a guarantee because we don't control the federal funding. But we have every belief and strong assurance that the states will be repaid. In South Dakota, last year they approved a $1 million federal funding advance. That may not sound like a lot, but we didn't ask for anything. We had a hearing to talk about our needs for this session, and some legislators felt the need to get a funding stream started, and so $1 million was approved that we're using for engineering and easement acquisition on two segments of a service line. This year, in the governor's omnibus water bill, there's $7.7 million, which will allow us to wheel water to Madison. Madison, South Dakota, is the last community in South Dakota that needs to be connected. And essentially, we would build the south end of the service line and the north end, and in the middle three sections would not be built right now. That would be in the future with federal funding. Instead, we would use two neighboring rural water systems in what I call the bucket brigade. We would sell water to one water system, they would sell to another water system, and they would sell to the city of Madison. So it's a way to address Madison's water needs for the next 20 years, and then we would simply wait for federal funding to arrive to build those middle three segments. The omnibus water bill has been described as the closest thing to a sure thing in the legislature. There's only been a handful of votes against the omnibus water bill in the last several years, so we feel extremely confident that this $7.7 million will be approved. In return, we've made the commitment to the state of South Dakota. We would not come back to them for any more advances. Again, we would wait for federal funding to complete those middle three segments of the Madison service line. In Iowa, we've met three times now in Des Moines with Governor Branstad, his leadership team, and legislative leaders about a $25 million federal funding advance. Similar to what we're doing today, we have a joint hearing in Des Moines on February 17th where we'll be talking more about that. In Minnesota, we are again incredibly thankful that the state approved $22 million. Our local legislators were true champions of the project, as were many of the legislative leaders, as well as Governor Dayton, so we can't thank all of them enough. Mr. Freeman indicated that we were required to apply a $5 million non-state cost share. The total is 8.3, because we originally had been allocated from the president $3.2 million, and then Congress approved some additional funding, much like they did this year, and we knew we were getting an additional $5.1 million. And so we had already obligated $3.2 million to that Minnesota line. So that's why the legislation last year read $5 million. The $5.1 million was rounded down to $5 million, because we had already committed over $3 million to the Minnesota line. So in reality, the non-state cost share was $8.3 million, but that's why the $5 million number appeared. There was no need to put in $8.3 million, because we had already allocated or obligated $3.2 million. We still need an estimated $48 million to connect Lincoln Pipestone and Worthington. One quick note about that number is our engineers use last year's inflation indexing for this year because the state has not yet, or at least as of last week, had not yet released its inflation indexing number for this past, for 2014. So that 48 could go up or down a little once we get the state's updated inflation numbers. So we would greatly appreciate consideration of another advance to keep construction moving forward in Minnesota. This is a breakdown of the costs involved. This is my last slide. The yellow shows where we expect to get with the $22 million that was provided. Our engineers estimate we're going to be a little short of getting all the way to the Rock County connection at Magnolia. And we've been asked, you know, yes, it would be great to get all the way to Worthington, and that's what we're asking for, but if you were to divide this into segments, how would you divide it? From Magnolia to the Lincoln Pipestone connection, we've called Group 1, and that's about $25 million, and then Group 2 takes it from the Lincoln Pipestone connection to Worthington, and that's $22 million. We've indexed these to the midpoint of construction, which is what the state officials have asked us to do. It includes no funding for what we call the Sibley service line. You'll see Sibley, Iowa is served off the Minnesota line, but that's obviously not part of any of these discussions. Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much. Just a quick question from the chair. That Sibley, Iowa line is just, if it's not part of the project, where did it come from?
Well, it's part of the authorized project, but we're, of course, not asking for the state for any funding for that because that would serve a Iowa member. But that is part of the authorized project.
I see. Thank you. Representative McGinnis has a question.
Oh, thank you. At the beginning, you talked about your water being drawn from a series of wells along the Missouri River. Tell us about how the rate of replenishing of those wells and the rate of replenishment as you fully do this project.
Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Larson.
I'm not an engineer, but I know that they use a term called cone of influence in determining what, when you have a well, will it impact irrigation nearby, other areas. And so our engineers have done an extensive amount of work on the cone of influence. These wells are recharged by the river. We're only about 100 yards from the Missouri River, so they're replenished very quickly. We don't draw water directly from the river, but the river recharges our aquifer. We're actually tapping into an aquifer adjacent to the river. So the replenishment is quite abundant, and this is the most abundant source of water in the tri-state region, and that's why it's being used as source.
Follow up, Representative Wagenius.
Then if your replenishment is the river, then you're going to have, your treatment costs are going to be totally different than when it's just a pure aquifer, because the river is going to give you additional gifts that you don't want. So tell us about the additional gifts that the Missouri River is giving you.
Mr. Larson.
Okay, I'll let you. Mr. Chairman, if I understand your question, there's different categories of water. If we were pulling water directly out of the Missouri River, it'd be called surface water. And then there's groundwater, where it's just a well. And then there's groundwater under the influence of surface water, where it's groundwater, but there's some nastiness in there. We, thankfully, right now are considered a groundwater source. At one time, we thought it may be groundwater under the influence of surface water. The benefit is we get a much higher quality of water because the water we're pulling is being filtered by the sand and the water. So it's extremely high quality compared to systems that pull directly out of the Missouri River.
Representative McGinnis.
The question I'm getting at is when you are not pulling from the aquifer, but pulling from the river via the aquifer. I mean, if the aquifer is only being replenished by the river, which it sounds like it is, there will be a point that it is river water. So the question is, what is this? I'm just looking at the costs that folks are going to be having to pay later on, and we need to understand those costs. So what's the condition of this river? I mean, as my understanding is South Dakota has an immense amount of salt in the river, and you have nitrate problems. Are there other problems?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Larson.
There is no scenario where we would be pulling out river water. We don't even have an authority to do that. And even if we did, none of the O&M is being covered by state money or federal money. If hypothetically our chemical costs were increased due to the concerns you raised, that's strictly the cost of the members to pay those chemical costs. No commitment by the state or the federal government to pay those.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I totally understand that it's coming out of the aquifer, but as your aquifer is drawn down, it's pulling river water in, and we need to understand what's in the river water that's being pulled in. And the reason I bring this up, you brought up Des Moines. Des Moines is now suing some of its counties because they think they need a $100 million new treatment system. And so we need to understand what our communities will be paying later on. And that's why I asked about the question, which we haven't heard the answer to yet. Will this water need to be finished again when it gets to Laverne or another community? But we're not getting the answer to the question I want. What's the condition of the Missouri that
Mr.
is
Lawrence.
Going to be feeding these aquifers?
Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to Mr.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'll make an attempt to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Arndt.
The water that is being recharged to the well is coming through all of the sand and gravel that's in there, so it's being somewhat filtered.
Somewhat.
Our treatment plant itself, even though we're not under the influence of surface water, is a lime softening plant, which is the same type of treatment that they use for surface water. So we in anticipation of maybe being under the influence of that, we built this treatment plant. As the water is treated, it comes out very soft, very clean. And it's moved, there is chlorine added, and along the way at some different pumping stations, there is a little bit of chlorine added. So when it gets to Laverne right now, the only thing we have to do is take it into our reservoirs and mix it with our water, because the patability will be there.
I'm still uncomfortable with the original source, that we don't understand enough about the source water and how long it will be there. If we've got, I mean, we've run into drought problems in Minnesota, and I can't imagine that drought stops at the border. And losing water in our aquifers, rising costs because of contamination. So
thank you, Mr.
Larson. Not understanding it.
Mr. Chairman, two of our wells angle under the river bed, and so if the Missouri River went dry, we would still have some water. And so I think your question is, you know, what happens if a drought and suddenly there's no water in the aquifer? The only scenario that would happen is if the Missouri River is bone dry. So that's extremely unlikely unless we hit Armageddon. Another way to put it in perspective is the 45 million gallons a day build out for Lewis and Clark represents less than 0.3% of the average daily flow of the Missouri River. So it really shows you how mighty the Mo really is. So if we run out of water, there is far bigger problems to deal with.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Representative Uglum has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Larson, you did an excellent job detailing the cost of not building this project, and the six projects total would increase to $1.8 billion you talked about and things, and essentially the burn cost of every year of not doing this, it gets to be more and more unmanageable. I'm curious about your thoughts. I mean, right now we do have an asset here. You know, it's producing water and everything else. Do you have any thoughts on how you can leverage this asset to provide more monies for completion of the project?
Mr. Chairman, Larson.
That's a very good question. There's two ways to answer that. One is we have right now the 20 members have reserved all the water that is available, but they don't use it all on a daily basis. So let's just hypothetically say the system's complete, all 20 members are receiving water. On any given day, we're not most likely going to max out our system. And so there has been discussion of adding not more members, but a customer. Maybe it's a community along the line that's not a member, but now that it's built, wants to receive water. We've talked about possibly doing that. The concern is these cities are located within service territories of rural water systems. So if they are a member of Lewis and Clark already, they, of course, want first shot to serve that community. And it's already happening right now with some of our cities and rural water systems selling to neighboring cities and rural water systems. So it would have to be a scenario where we're selling water to a rural water system that's not a member, or a city that's in a service area that's not part of our, or not part of a member rural water system's territory. So there'd be a very limited number of cities and rural water systems that would qualify. The second part of the answer that you asked Mr. Freeman is, can't we just charge the Lewis and Clark members some kind of service fee or construction fee to build more line? We have what's called an ARCA. It's an amended and restated commitment agreement amongst all 20 members. That ARCA is essentially our constitution, and that constitution prevents us from adding any kind of fee to fund construction until the system is completed. Once the system's completed, that goes away. The reason that was put there is the connected members didn't want the non-connected members to gang up and say, you know what, you guys are getting water, you guys and only you should have to pay this fee to construct more pipe. And so if there's additional money put in, it has to be all the members, all 20 members, putting in additional money at the same time. So even the non-connected members like Worthington would need to put in money. And you may say, okay, that sounds good. Why don't you just put in more money? We recently completed a binding arbitration with the city of Sioux Falls, and two of the three arbitrators agreed with the city of Sioux Falls that if the city is required to put in more money, and they make up about 42% of the project, that they would not have to make any of their payments until the system is completed, which means the other 19 members would have to float Sioux Falls' share for about 20 years or so. And it's just extremely unlikely that that would happen. And I won't go into all the details of why we lost that arbitration, but unfortunately we did.
A follow-up, Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like you got a tough row to hoe there. One other final question. From a funding source standpoint and everything else, are the counties involved at all, the counties themselves, in helping out with funding?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, the only county that's really involved is Rock County Rural Water District is overseen by Rock County itself. And so that's really the only county that's involved with the project. Are there any other counties that you can think of? So it's just Rock County because they have oversight of the Rock County Rural Water District. Other than that, there are no county governments involved.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Larson, great to have you here today. And this issue has been before the Senate Capital Investment Committee, but I've learned a lot about it. Senator Weber has kept me pretty well informed since his office is next to mine, so I hear lots of conversation about this, and so that's been very helpful. But this comprehensive has been really, really good. I think one of the issues, a lot of my questions have been answered about this, and so that's been really helpful about the federal advance understanding. One of my questions, though, is taking a step beyond that. If we are able to get this done, will local revenue cover or selling water or fees or those kinds of things, will that totally cover the ongoing operational and maintenance costs, possible replacement costs, additional water system cleansing costs, anything like that, water treatment?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. The water rates cover not only our O&M, but also we have reserve contributions. So in the future, we can replace a pipeline 50 years from now. So we have three reserve funds. Capital improvement is one fund. We also have maintenance and repair reserve fund and an operations fund. So to answer your question, there would be absolutely no commitment to the federal government or the states with regard to O&M or future replacement of the project.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
So one of the things that I've noticed here is a comment made earlier that because not everybody's on the system, they're not able or don't need to pay in, so you're losing that revenue the longer it takes to do the build-out. And I would suppose that would hamper you the longer this takes as well, because you're losing that ongoing revenue stream. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator
Larson,
to a degree that's correct, but because we're a nonprofit, we're really, what we're losing out on is the reserve contributions, not profit per se. But by all means, having more members connected would benefit the members who are connected, because their water rates would be reduced. You'd have Laverne and Worthington helping pay those fixed costs, insurance on our buildings, salaries, vehicle costs, those type of things. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
I have three more members on the list. We're going to go through quickly, and then we're going to reserve some time to cover provisions of the tax bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And testifiers, I understand what you're saying about your agreement. I'm wondering, I think Senator Sparks, City of Austin has done a half-cent sales tax to help pay for infrastructure. Has the City of Worthington extended their sales tax, or have the counties provided local option sales tax to do some of this, or is it your position you're prohibited from doing that because of your agreement?
Who wants to take it?
I can take it.
Go ahead,
Mr.
please.
Chair. In answer to that, what Worthington has done with that tax bill provision is they have preserved that opportunity. Worthington is the only one of the four entities that currently has a local option sales tax, and the tax bill provision allowed them the opportunity to extend that. They have taken the steps necessary to preserve that opportunity. At this point in time, we're not doing our... They haven't gone any further than that. As far as the counties, I'm not 100% sure.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
So that means it's still on their agenda, but they haven't voted to do it? The cities haven't voted to...
Mr. Hayne.
Mr. Chair, I believe that what was required was that the entities had to acknowledge that that provision in the law. I know that the City of Worthington has done that, and that provides them or preserves that opportunity for them to do that. At this point in time, no decision has been made as to whether or not they would extend that. But if I could, on top of that, as part of the sales tax provision, that the local option sales tax mechanism that was included in the tax provision kind of puts the obligation for the repayment on the four entities, but as Mr. Larson's presentation detailed, the project in and of itself is comprised of 20 members in three states, and essentially all costs of the project are really the obligation of all 20 of those members.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and I think that the questions, at least where I'm coming from, is you're asking if we go forward with either cash again or some type of financing that's paid by the general taxpayers of Minnesota, the logical question is what is in it, what is the contribution from the locals? And if the locals are not all participating, We have a whole list of cities in this state that have water problems that the precedent is there for a unlimited, never-ending, infinity payment for all the cities to be paying for this type of basic infrastructure. So that's the concern, is you break the seal on this, and it's not just you, it's everywhere, and that's a huge cost. So
Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of the frustrations of last year are flooding back, and you know, one of the things we were so conscious of last year was what they reminded us today, and that is this started in 1990, authorized by Congress in 2000, and they were going to do 80% of it. I mean, that was a federally authorized project that they didn't do. But at the same time, we struggle with their promises about veterans housing, which they are not doing. We struggle with their promises about transportation funding, which they are not doing. And in a number of areas, you know, there's this sense, well, the feds aren't doing it. Does that mean the state just starts saying, on all these very important things, do we start doing it? So Representative Uglum, I think, raises the issue that we struggle with most. How are we fair to everyone? How is the state fair to everyone, and then what is the expectation about local? One of the projects we looked at last year was Marshall in Representative Switzinski's area, where they are building 27 miles of pipeline, and they are doing it themselves. And as Representative Uglum observes, they are selling a billion gallons of water a year to residents and businesses. But I think the cost was something like $1,000 per resident or something like that. So you look at some of these others, and I think that's why the tax bill wrote in that consideration, how can the local governments bear some of the responsibility. And so I'm a little confused. I thought you said Worthington had imposed it, but you said all they have to do is acknowledge it. They don't have to impose it. Both Worthington, Rock, Nobles, Luverne, all of them were authorized in the tax bill to do that. But what did it mean that Worthington acknowledged it? But
Chair.
Mr. Hain.
Representative Hausman, my understanding is, in order to preserve the option, that there was some action that needed to be taken by the City Council or the County Commissions to recognize that special provision. Obviously, no one, well, in Worthington's case, they aren't going to extend the sales tax, nor in Rock County or Nobles County or the City of Luverne's case are they going to impose a sales tax unless or until they exercise the provision to borrow that $45 million and incur that debt. So I guess the answer to my question, or the answer to the question, was I know that the Worthington City Council took the steps necessary in recognizing that provision so they could at some point exercise that provision and extend the sales tax. I cannot speak to whether or not the counties of Nobles, Rock, or the City of Luverne did that.
Thank you, Mr. Haynes. Senator Scalzi, a quick question, and then we're going to move on to the bridge to the tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I have visited the area and have heard the presentation and on past capital investment tours, so I'm happy to hear this further information. One question I did ask when I was there was, what is the health of the aquifer? And I was told that it was going to last forever. And I represent cities close to White Bear Lake, and there may be a request for funding this year related to their problems in White Bear Lake, where the preliminary information shows that, in fact, the lake may be drawn down into the aquifer, and the aquifer is being drawn down further. So I'm just kind of curious, because aquifers don't last forever. They're not healthy forever. So I'm wondering if you have constructed measurement wells, or if there is some tool that you're using to let you know if you're drawing down the aquifer to where it won't provide the water that you think that it will.
Mr. Larson, a quick answer.
Mr. Chairman, we track that in terms of each of the wells has a pump, and how much water is being pumped. And when we see a drop-off, then there's usually a mechanical issue. You pull it out, and we just had that recently where we had to fix a pump because the water production really dropped. If we hypothetically pulled one out and it's not a mechanical issue, you'd be able to tell that there's an aquifer problem. Yes, we do have monitored wells, but I want to emphasize how close this aquifer is to the river. I've got a bad rotator cuff, but back in my day, I played a lot of baseball. I could throw from our well and make it into the river. That's how close it is. And so you can imagine that aquifer is being recharged at a tremendous rate. And so I think most of us think of an aquifer that's, you know, next to a lake or something like that. This is the Missouri River. And again, it's the most plentiful source of water we have in the region. If this goes dry, if that aquifer hypothetically goes dry, again, we have wells under the river bank. I just don't know how we'd ever run out of water unless the Missouri River goes dry. I hope that addresses your question. But we do have monitoring wells, so yes, we do monitor it.
Thank you for that short answer.
The cone of influence.
Thank you, gentlemen. We're running out of time, and I want to allow some time for Senator Stumpf to cover some ground he wants to cover in the tax bill, so I'm dismissing you from the table, gentlemen. Thank you for your presentation today. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what I'd like to do is to invite up our fiscal analyst, Shelby McQuaid, and Nora Pollock, our Senate counsel, and Steve Peterson from the Tax Committee, if they would join us up here. The provisions that were in the tax bill last year were provisions that were trying to address the complete picture of funding the project. And it wasn't that, I mean, we, I think, had initially the intent was to, on the part of the governor, was to put in a certain amount of money. And of course, that kept changing as we moved forward. And in working with Senator Weber in the Senate, and also Senator Skoy, the chair of the Tax Committee, we tried to figure out a way that the whole project could be funded if the federal government didn't come through. And the way that was constructed was through, obviously, an appropriation from the state, the $22 million, and then a series of mechanisms that were not necessarily just local money. And that's what I'd like to have them go through, is to explain that process that would have given some finality to this project. And I think that members here will get a good idea that this is something that is achievable if this all comes together. So I don't know who wants to go first. Ms. McQuaid?
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Shelby McQuay with Senate Council on Research and Fiscal Analysis. I staff the tax committees, and we were presented with this, as Senator Stumpf said, and what the tax bill did was authorize local bonding in up to $45 million and then set out some mechanisms to service the debt service on those bonds. Any of the municipalities could issue the bonds, the City of Luverne, the City of Worthington, Noble County, or Rock County. And then the debt service aid to service those bonds was calculated based on the debt service minus the some local effort, and then also minus 50% of any federal money coming in. The local effort was defined, or the proxy for the local effort was spread on net tax capacity, which is the tax capacity of the entire area, including ag land. And that amount was 1.5% of all that net tax capacity. And so beginning in fiscal year 16, the total amount of the debt service aid, which was the principal and interest minus the local effort minus any federal 50% of any federal monies coming in, was $2.2 million beginning in fiscal year 16 and 17, and that is ongoing for the duration of the bond issuance. The local effort, again, was a proxy, so the locals could contribute their portion based on a property tax levy or any of other mechanisms that they had in place under current law, and then we also provided them with some authority to impose some sales taxes, and Ms. Hollis will discuss those.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Nora Pollack with Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis, and I am counsel to the Tax Committee. As Ms. McQuay was saying, the tax bill authorized three new sales taxes for the City of Luverne and Rock County and Nobles County. The City of Worthington had already imposed a local sales tax that was approved in 2006, and then I think finally imposed in 2009, and it was authorized for about 10 years, so it was scheduled to be paid off in 2019. What the tax bill did was extend that authority for the existing local sales tax, and I should have mentioned before, all of these were half-cent sales taxes, so it authorized Worthington to extend that authority for till 2039, which is the projected debt service on the bonds. Representative Hausman, in response to your question, Worthington, as I said, already does have a local sales tax. The mechanism for approving the local sales taxes in this bill is that the governing board of the county or the city would have to approve a resolution authorizing the sales taxes, and then there's a process for that being filed with the Secretary of State. Worthington, to my knowledge, has not approved this extension that was authorized in the tax bill. Luverne has just recently adopted this resolution to impose the sales tax. I don't know if it is being imposed or collected at this point. And then the kind of standard provisions in local sales taxes were that the revenues must be used to pay back the bonds pay back the debt service on the bonds issued according to whatever the local jurisdiction's share of the project was determined to be. And then the sales tax would terminate at the time that the debt service is paid off.
Okay. One other final facet, I would say, is that by doing it this way, we are not, and I believe Ms. Hansen, maybe she's gone. Oh, she's here. By doing it this way, we're not using actually state capacity. Is that correct? By doing it the way it was structured in the tax committee, we do not account for that as under the state capacity, bond capacity. Is that correct?
Ms. Hansen, please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Kristen Hansen, the Assistant Commissioner of Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. Chair Stubb, the answer is correct. This would not count against the state's capital investment guidelines.
Okay. So I think, it seems like this was something that certainly was acceptable on both bodies bipartisanly, and I didn't really hear the board kind of look or mention much about it. So I'm thinking that I'm hoping that it gets discussed out there, because the state is picking up a portion, and we don't know exactly what portion, or is it half roughly, or more than that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I think that the net tax capacity at 1.5% of net tax capacity at the time, and I don't think the calculations or any of the information has been updated, because this is also what was in the November forecast, was approximately a third of the debt service payment. So the local effort was a third.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
I guess I'll just clarify. The third of the debt service payment and not the entire project.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think we should probably bring our other testifiers back to the table at this point to clarify their perspective on these tax provisions. Mr. Larson, Mr. Arndt, and Mr. Hain, if you would please return. Representative Hamilton, I believe you had a question or a remark to make while they're getting ready.
Well, I say it can wait.
It can wait. All right. Very good. Mr. Larson, would you like to start?
Mr. Chairman, I'll take the first crack and then turn it over to Mr. Hain. The thing to emphasize about that tax bill, we're very appreciative for the efforts that were made to help. Thank you. Because it came in at not only the 11th hour, but 1 minute before midnight, we did not even have a chance to review any of the language. And so understandably, there were some incorrect assumptions made that right now, how it's written, it's simply not feasible. One fatal flaw is the fact that it would require the four Minnesota members to fund all the way, the whole amount. I think it's up to $45 million. You can't segment that. You can't take it in smaller bites. The other fatal flaw was the very next year you had to start using federal funding to start repaying that debt. And the other states, Minnesota or South Dakota has already committed and we're working with Iowa, is the repayment would not take place till all 20 members were connected. And as Mr. Hain indicated before, we're a 20-member board, and there's simply no way a majority of the members would vote to repay Minnesota before the other two states. And then I'll turn it over to Mr. Hain.
Mr. Hain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess just to elaborate a little bit on what Troy said, and again, you know, we certainly appreciate the efforts that were made to provide a funding mechanism going forward. The issue, like Mr. Larson pointed out, is probably the most problematic is the intent within the language to utilize 50% of any federal funds received to pay or to buy down the state's share of the debt service and utilize 50% essentially to buy down the local's share of the debt service. The issue being that any federal funds received do not come to the Minnesota Joint Powers Board. Those are funds that are received by Lewis and Clark, Inc., and how they are used is controlled by a 20-member board of directors. So, you know, it's just problematic. It was essentially by the local entities, one, two, or all four, going ahead with this, just absolutely unable to commit what a 20-member board is going to do with ongoing federal funding on a year-to-year basis.
Thank you. I think this would be an opportunity to talk a little bit about who owns what when. I think Mr. Hansen, if you could kind of go through that, because this question of owner, or Mr. Larson, I'm sorry, this question of ownership certainly is one that directly affects the funding efforts we are looking at.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, how it was set up with the $22 million that was approved last year is the infrastructure is owned by the Minnesota Joint Powers Board, essentially these four Minnesota members. And then working with the folks at PFA, and MMB on the grant agreement, how it's worded is as we start repaying the state, there's a mechanism to transfer ownership of the portion of the line. Let's say we get $3 million in a given year that we can repay to the state of Minnesota. There's a mechanism to identify what portion of the pipeline is being transferred to Lewis and Clark from the Joint Powers Board, that Lewis and Clark is essentially buying it back. And the reason for that is we are prevented from using federal funds for any infrastructure that we do not own, much like you have the same rules. And so the transfer of ownership has to take place, but it's going to have to take place over likely several years. So there's a mechanism where we can identify engineering station numbers using the price of the pipe in the bid to identify exactly how much pipe will $3 million build. buy back. So we don't have to appraise it of what's it currently worth. The agreement is whatever the bid price was for per foot price on the pipe is what we'll use to buy it back. And so we look forward to meeting here shortly with MMB and other officials of whether that same concept can be used with regard to the bond funds. But we had to go through the exact same ownership issue to finalize the grant agreement. Even though we use grant dollar or cash, we still had to address that ownership issue. Mr. Chairman, does that answer the question?
Thank you. Representative Runbeck has a question, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if there's anyone in the audience who could talk about under what circumstances might legacy money be available. I mean, is there any little window, or have we already covered that? I don't know. Or, yeah, that's an age-old question by this time, I realize. But are there any little?
I see you have some cash on the table, Representative.
There we go.
I'm going to avoid that for today. Thank you. Representative Uglum.
Listen, let me say something. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. Now, has your board actually convened and discussed the financing that we discussed here in terms of bonding and what was in the bill last year? Have you convened? You mentioned it came and it did. It was 11:59. It came at the last minute. But have you discussed any of that formally?
Mr. Chairman, maybe the way to answer that question is not specifically to the tax bill, but the same concept. What we call either a construction loan or a capital call is where we require the members to put in more money for whatever reason. And 2 years ago, the board voted down a vote that would have helped get the line from the Iowa border to Luverne. This past October, actually, it had been the previous October, they voted to approve a small amount of construction funding or construction loan, and that resulted in that binding arbitration with the city of Sioux Falls that we lost. So the concept of asking the members, not asking, requiring the other members to put in more money has been discussed ad nauseum and at great angst and gnashing of teeth. It's an extremely controversial issue. The question of the tax bill itself never came up because we were covering the same topic, just in a different discussion, if that makes sense.
Mr. Chair,
follow up quickly.
Yeah, well, I submit to you that there should be an in-depth discussion on that among the board members, and if you're going to be successful in this project, you're going to have to think out of the box here. You mentioned Constitution, and the Constitution is... U.S. Constitution is kind of a living document. You have to change. You have to. If you're going to get this deal done, and we've tried to help, but if you're going to get this deal done, you've got to be innovative and think out of the box here. And I'm not seeing that. Thank you,
Representative Erdahl. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not exactly a question, but maybe a response to the legacy question. You get into the issues of supplanting and supplementing with this. Legacy money can only be used to supplement traditional sources of funding, and I don't think that it would work in this category. I think there are other traditional sources of funding established for water projects.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It was pretty ironic. On my way down here, I ran into a gentleman that said, "You're heading to Lewis and Clark." I said, "Yes." He said, "I worked on that back when I was in the Senate, back in the 90s. And he was, he can't believe it's not built yet. I want to remind everybody, the reason why we're here is because of the federal government's inability to follow through with what their promise was. And we have, on a local level, we have paid more than once as far as our share on this. And I want to applaud Governor Mark Dayton last year. It was Governor Dayton that stepped up and recognized this. And the concern that we have, we're talking about the local option sales tax and stuff there as well. The city of Worthington, they recognize the need here. Believe me, they recognize the need. The struggles that we have, in the event that we raise the taxes, and these are the same struggles that all of you have as well, is that in the event the folks of Worthington step up and we step up and pay this, When the federal funds come in, they can, we have four people on a 20-person board, those federal funds will be redirected elsewhere. And so here you have this, the folks in the community of Worthington stepping up and paying for this project that's encompassing multiple states. These are the things that we're struggling with, just like everybody else in this committee. But the point is, it's water. It's the most valuable nutrient known to mankind, absolutely. And so like Governor Dayton said, he said, you know what, we're not going to wait for the feds. We're going to keep the pressure on them, and we're going to fight tooth and nail to get those dollars. But we can't wait. We have to get this project to the folks that in which it services. And so, again, just like these three gentlemen said, we are grateful. Believe me, you, we are grateful for the state stepping up. And we have been creative. We have been thinking out of the box since 1990 trying to get this completed. So, again, I thank you for your time. I thank you for your understanding. And I thank you for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. I did not hear a question in there.
You didn't hear.
Thank you. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one final comment. I know our time is wrapping up. We can't emphasize enough how the dynamic works with having 20 members that each have one vote over three states. The example of Marshall came up earlier. Marshall got to make that decision as Marshall. Worthington can't make the decision on their own. You have 20 members, and we need 11 to make that change. And to change our Constitution, we have talked about changing our Constitution. It takes a unanimous vote of all 20. Imagine that taking place. And so that's the challenge that we have, that I realize you have similar scenarios that, you know, Marshall, just do what Marshall did. We have 11 members right now that have water. So right out of the bat, there's a majority of the members that have water. Yes, they're paying more than they would like to, but they at least have water. So what's their incentive to vote to borrow $20 million? The incentive just isn't there. So please keep that dynamic in mind.
Representative Hansen, very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick question. This is more of a technical one. Does the pumping go both ways? I see that the map has the system provided touches the Minnesota River. So is the flow designed with the infrastructure one way, or can it go both ways?
Mr. Chairman, right now it's just one way. There is a possibility, if we have federal funds at the end of the project, to loop the system between Sibley and Sheldon, Iowa. If you look on your map, right now we're considered a non-looped system. If we do have the funds to loop it, which is not part of the authorized project, then we could do some reverse flow, but right now it's not designed that way.
Quickly.
And Mr. Chair, do we run into any problems with that of crossing watershed boundaries between the Mississippi watershed and the Missouri watershed?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is no. Originally we did. We had Red Rock Rural Water that was a member, and there were some issues, so Red Rock had to drop out.
Thank you. I would like to thank the Senate and Senator Stump for joining us today. I appreciate your being here. There's a reason we brought this to the table early, because we know there are issues to be worked out. I would like to thank our testifiers and thank all the members for their good questions and attendance today. We'll try to move ahead with a good plan. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.